Thanks for joining us at Down the Pit. I'm your host, Sami Merdinian, along with Ian Lowe. In today's episode, we will continue our conversation where we left off last week with violinist, singer-songwriter Charles Yang. He tells us how he got started singing, a bit about the instruments he owns and plays on, crazy stories while on tour, his thoughts on crime against Asians in America, his friendships, sources of inspiration, and of course, our espresso section.
We would like to thank our corporate sponsor, US Pave. For any of your commercial or residential paving needs, please visit uspave.com. US Pave, the national paving company.
So you talked a little bit about your singing. What kind of training did you have, or it was something that you did as a kid and it was just natural?
I always loved singing. Mm-hmm. That's something that, as a kid, I would always be singing something. I wasn't shy about it.
Do your parents want you to stop singing?
Oh, many times. Yeah, many times. Well, not now, but in the beginning of my career before Time for Three, or, you know, I was singing and they're like, you know, I remember doing an encore. My friends and my parents were in the audience. And before the show, my friends were just like, oh, you should sing. You should sing for that, for the encore. And my parents were like, no, sing, don't sing. And I did, and it was, people loved it, and they're like, okay, fine, you sing. But I've always loved singing, never had any training. I joined choir in high school because all the cute girls were in choir.
Makes sense.
Other than that, yep. You know, it all just came kind of weirdly naturally.
So many of our listeners love to know what kind of instrument our guests perform on. Can you tell us about yours?
Yeah, so I played many instruments, actually. I've been lucky that some people have loaned me some great instruments, but I've also bought two modern violins. The first modern violin I bought was a trifecta of an instrument made by three luthiers, that which they called the Tres Amigos, by Antoine Niedelik, Jeff Phillips, and Ryan Stoltis. And I liked it, but it wasn't my voice. A couple years ago, I bought a Jeff Phillips violin that I fell in love with, you know. Had a lot of great sound. It sounds like an old Italian violin. Recently, that same feeling happened. It didn't really do it for me. So I picked up my old violin that my parents bought when I first got my full-size violin. It's a French instrument by Charles Gand Père, the father, who was a prolific maker back in France, 1826, took over the Lupo shop. It's not like the famous names like Lupo or Viomme. But for me, it was the voice that I had growing up. It was a Magini model that got cut down. So like the sides are all cut down and shaved off. And it's just weird looking, kind of a really dark violish kind of sound. But I grew up knowing that sound. It was always a little different. And I just miss that in a lot of fiddles. I picked it up again, and now I'm just playing on it. I'm obsessed with it again. It's like I found my voice. I got my voice back. So yeah, it's not the perfect fiddle, but it has the things that I was missing. And I actually just bought a bow yesterday. I just bought a new bow by Lee Guthrie, and mm-hmm. I'm super psyched about it. You gotta try this, Sami.
Absolutely. Would love
to. Beautiful bow. But yeah, that's what I play on. And I've always thought, you know, it's to strive for the Strad or the Del Gesù, and that I won't be complete until I have that. But that's not the case, I don't think. There's so many great makers today living that are out there, like Jeff Phillips. And there's also so many gems that are not the famous names that you just got to find the right voice for yourself, right? Yeah. That doesn't come in a famous name or package. For me, that's my childhood violin. I'm very happy.
Amazing. Since we're talking about instruments, what kind of satisfaction do you get by playing electric violin as opposed to acoustic?
You know, weirdly, I don't really play electric violin that much anymore because I don't take it on the road. I haven't really done much on it.
But it brings no satisfaction.
No, I would say, I can't. My family at NS Design would hate me over there. But yeah, I mean, they've been a really, NS Design is the violin that I play, Ned Steinberger, who makes my electric violin. and they're really supportive, but it's just a different thing. You know, you wouldn't pick up an electric violin and want it to sound like a, you know, a regular violin. That's not the point. So I think it's a different, whenever I pick it up, I put it through a lot of different effect pedals just to create a sound that you normally wouldn't get on a violin. And that is a totally different satisfaction. I can literally sit in my room plucking away at some weird sounds for hours. So yeah, it's just very different. Do you play electric too, Sami?
No.
Do you have one?
I don't.
All right, we'll jam.
Looking forward to it.
So Charles, as you are performing, what are you thinking about? I know that's a loaded question, and
yeah.
And you said earlier each performance is different because of the improvisation.
I think all of that emotion, all of the actual imagery of the songs we write or the lyrics that we write, that all goes within the songwriting process, and I kind of pour all that there. And then, of course, we rehearse it, but on stage, I feel like it's just the same with classical music. You know, you practice to a point when you're on stage and you want to be able to just be free. You know, your mind, it just kind of channels through your body rather than think about your next move or think about specific imagery. Yeah, when I'm on stage singing these songs, I know it in and out now, so I don't necessarily think about anything. You know,
you're just on autopilot.
Weirdly on autopilot, but in terms of the sounds coming out, but the emotion is there. It's already there because I've done it so many times, you know. Basic emotions are all there. But yeah, I think that all goes within the songwriting process. But, you know, if my other bandmates do something a little different that night or like switch up something, of course, to adapt and to kind of play chamber music in a way, there's no better feeling than that. You know, sometimes I think about people that don't play music. We are so lucky we get to channel emotions through tactile sensations, you know, through our fingers. Literally through our fingers, we channel that. Sometimes that third finger just feels so good on that high note, you know? And it's just a feeling that that people that don't play music, I think, strive for in different ways, but we get it every time we play. That is a great feeling, to just be spontaneous on stage, to get out of that autopilot, for sure.
You spend a lot of time on the road. You must probably have some crazy stories. What's the strangest thing that has happened to you while on tour?
Oh, man.
That you can share to a...
Yeah, right. I'm trying to filter PG. Those
oh,
out.
He can share.
He can share. First of all, we have an amazing tour manager, Dave Ross. He is one of the most professional guys out there, but also the funniest dudes you'll ever meet. And he pretty much keeps things exciting on tour. You know, he's the funniest dude and always really nervous. Like, we're not really nervous people going on stage when, you know, for Time for Three, but Dave will just be, he'll just be pretty...
Wreck ball.
Yeah, he's like, guys, we got 5 minutes. So I'm like, Dave, you gotta chill. We'll be there. No, we got five minutes. Yeah, I remember we had to play a show in Peoria, and we said yes to the show, but also we had to be in Prague the next day. We had to drive. We finished an afternoon show, and Dave, like, nervously got us a limo service because there was no other way that can get us there fast enough with all our gear. Got us a limo. We hopped right out of the backstage, went to the limo, and, you know, gave us enough time to get there, but not really. But a blizzard hit. Like, this was during one of the biggest blizzards that had happened a couple years ago. And we were just stuck in this, like, blizzard and terrible traffic. We were celebrating. We had all the goodies in the limo, just drinking. And like, oh, yeah, we'll get there on time. But after every, like, hour of the drive, they're like, no, this is, we're barely going to make it. And we were pretty wasted. And just in this car, kind of all freaking out and like, oh no, we're not going to make, because we had rehearsal the next day in Prague. This was the last flight we had to make. We just got there. There's like maybe 10 minutes left for us to check in all the bags that we needed to do. And our driver drops us off. We all get in, and then we realize he dropped us off at the wrong terminal. So we had to, we were freaking out. We all had to pee really bad because we drank a lot in the car. And we're just running around like, oh no, we're not going to make it. So we all hop back in the limo. He drives us to the next terminal. We get to the gate, And they say, oh, we're all sweaty and kind of like smelling of booze. And and they're like, oh, we got to get on this flight. And they're just like, oh, your flight's been delayed 3 hours. And we're like, oh, thank God. That was the only time we've ever been happy that a flight got delayed. We were so grateful that we got to the gate. All the pilots were there and the flight attendants, and we just took out our instruments and we played for them. So that was a stressful but really, you know, memorable experience.
So is there a video of that performance by the gate?
Yeah, I think there is actually. I think we posted it on Instagram. It was a while back. But yeah, it was nice.
Most importantly, did you continue drinking?
Absolutely. I mean, we had
to the point that you miss your flight.
that'd be a better story. Yeah. That'd be a better story.
Nice. So how would you describe your life to someone you just met on the street that is not a musician?
I'm a terrible elevator pitch person. I'm so bad, I just ramble. But maybe that's the charm. People stay and listen, weirdly. You mean Time for Three?
No, Charles Yang.
Just you.
I used to say I'm a violinist a lot, you know. But now when people say, oh, what do you do? I say I'm a musician. And then I branch from there, you know. Classically trained, but I love songwriting, and I love performing kind of singer-songwriter stuff while also keeping true to the classical tradition. So I putting me on the spot here, but yeah, that's usually how I tell people what I do.
Switching gears a little bit, what's your take on Asian hate crimes that have been happening in the last few months? Being Asian American, have you personally experienced racism growing up?
What we're seeing now on camera, what we're seeing now in the media, and when we say a couple months, you know, it's been happening for far longer than it should, you know, not just a couple months, but, you know, stories like this happen all the time. You know, my parents will call me because they heard something happened, you know, in New York that's not on the news, but for years. And it's just, all of this needs to stop, right? It's just not productive in any way. Growing up in Texas, I was very lucky because I had a group of friends that were just very nurturing, and we all would kind of pick on each other in a very brotherly way, you know? Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we had the Latino friend, we'd pick on him, the white friend, we'd pick on him, and of course they would pick on me for being Asian, you know, but it was not in any threatening way, you know? So I grew up kind of maybe hardened a little bit in terms of just with people I know saying these things. I look back at it and I wouldn't say that I was ever offended by it, you know, because these are my friends. They're still my friends today. We still talk like we used to. But when it comes to being sensitive to people that you don't know, that you don't have a strong bond with, that infuriates me, you know. And when I hear stories that are happening, what I've seen on tour before of just being that Asian guy in the band, you know, and then people saying, oh, you should meet my, you know, my friend who turns out to be Asian. I'm like, why? Just because I'm Asian, I need to meet this person? It's just a lot of this stuff happens. A lot of hate crimes happen. Thankfully, I haven't had any of that. But all of it, it's just, you know, to separate pure hate and ignorance is also an important thing, too. Educate the ignorant, but also stop the hate. So I think the generations right now are being very proactive about it, that hopefully in future generations we can all just see each other eye to eye, you know, and be people.
In his bones, but he keeps a smile on his face. Oh, born with a heart that's overgrown, a song that beats its own pace, misunderstood, fought to be good, and hands in his pockets, his head in his hood, hiding and shy, a mess of a guy, fighting and trying and dying inside. He cries, joy, joy.
Isn't that amazing? I just love this song. Joy, performed and written by the members of Time for Three, Nicholas Kendall, Renan Meyer, and our guest today, Charles Yang. Time for our second espresso, and we will start with Mendelssohn.
I can't not say violin concerto.
Bach.
Chacon.
Corelli.
That's
a curveball.
That's a curveball. Something I can't name. Sonatina? Let's just say Sonatina.
Kurt Sessmanhaus.
Scary Bear.
Paul Kantor.
Gentle Bear.
Brian Lewis.
Friendly Bear.
Glenn Dichterow.
My Uncle.
Sarasate.
Hard Stuff.
Korngold.
Also Hard Stuff.
Heifetz.
Also Hard Stuff.
Rain Ends.
Incredible musician.
Boy Tinsley.
Electric Violin.
Austin, Texas.
Beautiful women.
New York City.
Beautiful women.
Joshua Bell. Beautiful women.
Beautiful woman. Yeah. I think he'd say the same, yeah.
Andrew Bird.
Pioneer.
Lindsey Sterling.
Pioneer too.
Skateboarding.
Rotator cuff.
Charles Yang.
Double rotator cuffs. Yeah, those are hard.
You passed.
Okay, good.
So outside of the world of music.
Well, before we move on, how do you know Heifetz is really hard?
You could see it in his pose, man. You could see he's doing the belt trick. Come on.
Yeah. Ready to move on, Sami?
Yeah, on that note, yes, please.
Outside of the music world, how do you spend your free time?
I love friends. Not the show. I haven't seen the show, but I'm surrounded by really good people. Yeah, I just like spending time with friends.
So you're able to balance a relationship while being on the road so much?
Well, the good thing too is that, you know, the people I'm on the road with are some of my closest friends too. Mm-hmm. So when we're not working, it's always a good time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes better than when we're working. Friendships are important. They feed the soul. Also, just adventures, like making memories with people. Mm-hmm. That definitely feeds my musicianship. I gotta say, like, just different things that happen to me in my life always result in, you know, something. It might be a lick, a riff, or a lyric. I kind of collect all those memories, and I'm grateful for it.
Speaking of what's good for the soul, do you have any good violin jokes?
Yeah, those are. Are you sure those are good for the soul, or is it the viola jokes?
Point well taken. Yeah.
I actually have no violin jokes at all. I don't know a single violin joke.
So you've traveled the whole world, and you haven't heard anybody in the whole world say a violin joke. You could plagiarize. It's fine.
I cannot name one violin. I don't even remember. See, maybe maybe those are the memories I don't collect.
What inspires you?
So many things inspire me. You know, like you guys starting a podcast during this time, what you guys do, what a lot of my colleagues and peers, what they do. I find that I'm inspired every day by something, maybe musically or not. But like even at a grocery store or in my apartment, I hear like a train of car honks, you know, that add up to some kind of melody. The world is a very interesting place, you know, and you can be inspired by it anywhere. But I got to say, I just came from a summer intensive music camp that my bandmate Renan Meyer started called Resonance. Every artist there was no genre affiliated with them. They were all kind of mixed genre groups or soloists. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most inspiring weeks of my life. You know, there's a girl from Curtis, strict classical musician, but also had done some fiddling in the past, had a beautiful singing voice. Her collaborating with these roots musicians and coming up with a new sound was just something so amazing to witness, as well as the other artists just interacting with each other. And Time for Three was just there as an example of a career that worked and how to guide them throughout that. I think the future is going to be bright within the performing arts with these kids. So that was really inspiring. I learned a lot from that week. And big, big shout out to Renan for starting such an awesome camp.
Awesome. What gives you hope?
Again, I can only speak right now as a musician. I think music is a big, it sounds cheesy, but music can bring so much hope to the world, you know? Mm-hmm. No matter if you're a musician or not, it's just something that we're all connected to. Going back to the Asian hate stuff or any kind of racial injustice, we're in an industry where music itself has just so much color in it. It's so colorful, tonally and also just by skin color. And to be able to mix within that, I think we can learn a lot outside of music, through music, on how to be human beings. You know, so music, seeing these kids in the last week just want to learn, want to be curious, want to collaborate with each other, and seeing my peers and colleagues do the same thing, I think we can really bring a lot of hope in some dark times, you know? Your podcast, you know? Thank you guys for having this.
What are your fears? That I'm not going to edit it well and something is going to lick?
Please edit this well. I'm going to go PG here. I'm terrified of roller coasters.
Okay.
Roller coasters are really scary. I love thrill. I'm a thrill seeker. Like, I love skydiving. I ride an electric skateboard that goes 30 miles an hour through the streets of New York, but I'm scared of roller coasters. I don't know why.
Is that because you don't have the control over it?
Maybe it's I don't have the control. I mean, skydiving, I really had no control either. There's someone doing it all, but
listen, with roller coasters, you hear people screaming like they're falling to their death, and it plays with your mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, maybe that's it. You hear the screams, and it triggers my fear meter inside me. We could talk about what else I'm scared of later.
So what is one thing as musicians we could do differently or better that can place us in a more prominent role in society?
Well, I do think music does play a very prominent role within society, right? There's just so many genres within that that are kind of segregated in different communities. That, to me, I think can change, right? And we're seeing it starting to change with a lot of pop music and the integration between jazz and hip hop and rock and roll and soul. All of this kind of combination is already happening. Musicians within our industry can kind of see that as an example of open-mindedness, you know, and that kind of is in that inviting feeling, I think, will open so many more doors to different genres that haven't been created, but also just for people that go to Lincoln Center to be able to sit next to someone that hasn't been ever to Lincoln Center, you know, and find the similarities between music. That is really powerful to me, you know, bringing audiences together so that they can not just listen to something, but interact through the music in a way that becomes almost more social. I think it can really just bring people together. So I think for us musicians to kind of have that open door, that open-mindedness, it can really change a lot of people's thinking.
It's kind of linked to what you just said. You work with a lot of young musicians like the ones at the festival you were at, and most of them are on the verge of breaking into having careers in music. Mm-hmm. What are some elements you consider essential to make sure that they are successful?
Well, the first thing is honesty. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be honest and authentic to who you are and your product. Without that, first of all, you're not going to be very happy moving forward in your career. And second, audiences can sense that. Mm-hmm. Sense if this is honest and it's something that is you. So I think that is the first thing for sure, is to have honesty no matter what. We've all been through a conservatory and we've all thought, oh, we have these options. We can be a soloist, a chamber musician, an orchestral musician, or a teacher, in that order. And that needs to change, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no hierarchy in any of this. Educators are what run the world and the future generations. And some people are made for that. But when you think about it in a tier level, it's limiting. So find out what it is that inspires you and what you can kind of give your all towards, you know, because you've been practicing Beethoven violin concerto your whole life doesn't mean you'd be happy in that role, or you are, you know. So know what you want to do, know what it is you want to do, and also keep an open mind of all the other things that you're able to do. And of course, you got to have some sort of X factor, you know, and I think that goes with the authenticity of who you are. If you have an X factor, if it feels put on, it's going to be really painful later in life, you know, that you always got to put on this persona. So have that authentic X factor, no matter what it is.
Nice.
Can you give us three people that have inspired, influenced, or helped you to get to where you are now?
My mother. I think, coming full circle, my mother made me play the violin, got me into music. I hated it for so long. Now I'm a professional musician, and I'm just so grateful for every tool that she gave me, that she made me play violin, made me learn all this stuff that she saw I was good at, you know, and she nurtured that, even if I hated it. But I think the inspiration there is that she was playing violin and learning violin at a really tough time in China during the Cultural Revolution. You know, the very end of it it was a tough time. And her going to college and her going to Montreal to study and then to the States, that's tough, you know. Mm-hmm. No family members in the U.S. to immigrate and to still be a professional violinist. She's in the Austin Symphony and teaching as well. That's really inspirational to me. You know, I kind of got that get out of jail free card, you know, almost like handed to me a violin. And then, you know, I had my hoops to go through, but nothing like that. So that always keeps me grounded whenever I think I'm in a rut or whatever. I'm like, well, my mom had to go through all this stuff and is making it and supported me growing up. That's a huge inspiration for me.
How was she able to separate being your mom and then being your teacher? Like, how did she turn the switch on and off? Like, if you missed a note, did she love you less?
Oh, man. It was always teacher mom. There was never, to this day, it's teacher mom.
Teacher mom. Gotcha.
Yeah, teacher mom for sure, all the time. And even when I go home and I'm practicing and I'm upstairs, she's downstairs cooking, and she hears a bad note or whatever, she'll scream in Chinese, like, wrong note! Charles, it's time to eat! In the same sentence, you know? So it's, I've always had that my whole life. It's a little stressful, but it's the only way that I know.
You keep going back home to Austin.
I don't know why. maybe I still need training. That's why I keep going back. And I'm just like, oh, man, I'm learning a lot still when I go back. But yeah, she's definitely an inspiration and will be my forever teacher.
So that's one. Two more.
Glenn Dictorow, my teacher at Juilliard and my final real school teacher, was a huge inspiration to me, is a huge inspiration to me. Because here is a guy that won all these awards as an incredible soloist and then won a job in the LA Phil at an early age and then the New York Phil at an early age, but also played a lot of movie scores, taught at both Juilliard and Manhattan when I was there, played chamber music. He did it all. He didn't just limit himself. And I was, not to say limit him, my other teachers were limiting themselves, but I never had a teacher that was such an active performer in all aspects, you know? And that, I think, really nurtured me in school to be who I am today, to see it all. I remember he used to play a bunch of gigs for Broadway, or he wouldn't play the gigs, but he would either do recordings of it or whatnot. But he knew the producers, and they called me during at Juilliard to do a on-stage Broadway show for like months and months on stage. And producer called me, and I talked to Glenn, and he was like, yeah, it'll be fun if you want to do it. I'm like, but Glenn, I'm in school. Like, I literally can't do this. He's like, oh, whatever. But that kind of mentality, he's always looking out for his students. And yeah, that kept my open-mindedness going. So Glenn's one for sure. And one last, just off the top of my head, there's so many and it's hard to choose, but actually a good friend of mine who actually passed last year during this time, passed way too early. He was young, but his name's Michael Holly. Lived the most interesting life. He was roommates with Steve Jobs, was an inventor, but also started this kind of TED Talk-like thing where he brought in all these different people from all walks of life that are successful in their field together to kind of spend a week of just learning from each other. And I got to know him there, but he won the amateur division of the Van Cliburn competition when he was younger. So he's a legit pianist, and we'd always play music together. But I learned so much and was always so inspired by him because he could fit into any conversation that you throw at him. May it be music, may it be astronauts. I met astronauts at this thing, and or movie actors. And, you know, he got everyone together, and he could fit into all of that in conversation. And because he just learned about these things, you know. I've always been inspired by him. Still am. Miss him. Miss him a lot.
How is your schedule looking like in the next few months? Any special projects brewing that you can share with us?
Touring's happening again. But in terms of exciting like projects that are happening, I mean, Time for Three, like I told you guys, we're supposed to premiere a new concerto written for us by Kevin Putz last year with San Francisco Symphony and Philadelphia Orchestra and a couple of other orchestras. But because of the pandemic, we couldn't do it. But we are making a recording of it with a very, very awesome orchestra. And I don't know if I can actually say yet, but yeah, so we are making a record.
Is it in Midwest, West Coast?
It's East Coast.
East Coast, okay.
Yeah, East Coast.
Northeast, Tri-state. Southeast.
Tri-state.
Specifically where.
It's okay.
I don't know if I can say yet. So yeah, that's going to be really fun. I'm hoping to put out some solo stuff, my songwriting, and I've been working a lot during the pandemic, just writing. So I hope to put that
out. I've seen some pictures of crazy studio you built in your apartment.
Well, yeah. Yes. Well, I just moved into a new place during the pandemic. You know, new neighbors in New York City. I didn't want to like bother my neighbors. So I bought this huge room within a room kind of thing that you build inside your apartment, which is essentially a practice room or recording studio. And yeah, a couple of my buddies and Mike Thurber actually did the finishing touches on it, helped me put it together. And it's just dead quiet in there. Sometimes I go in there to cry, you know, it's really relaxing. No, but seriously, it's amazing. I can play there all night without any distraction.
Cool. Very cool.
So tell us where people can find you online, social media and website.
My website's charlesyangmusic.com. My Instagram is Chaz Violin with 2 Z's. I think my Facebook is Charles Yang Music. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
Nice.
My number is 1-800.
Yeah.
So we are at the end of the show, and this is your time to talk about anything you would like that we maybe haven't covered, or a message to our listeners.
Well, I want to say keep listening to Down the Pit, because
that's right.
You guys are leading the charge here with good content, engaging content, and for us artists to just kind of talk and vent in a weird way, you know, it's very therapeutic. But I just want to say just how much I respect Ian. Well, I just met you, but you know, Sami, what you guys do as well with Sybarite 5, it's just so great to have musicians trained in other fields but are just opening up to so many other audiences. That's what I strive to always do, and it just feels good to have an alliance, you know,
for future collaborations together.
Yes, let's do it. Let's do it.
Well, thanks so much, Charles. It has been a true honor to have you on the show.
Honor's mine, guys. This was so fun.
Classical music needs more Charles Yangs around.
I don't know about that.
Your mom would agree or disagree?
No, that's a lot of angry moms. If you want more Charles Yangs, angry moms.
Good luck with everything, and we look forward to witnessing where your career will take you next.
Thank you, my dudes. So
really
great to talk to you guys.
Thank you so much, man.
All right.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for sticking around until the end and allowing us to be a part of your day. We don't have all the solutions to the world's problems, but classical music for sure can help solve a few of them. Please follow us on social media, and we cannot wait for you to join us next time.